Hi, I'm Lauren Gilger, co-host of the show, one of KJZZ's original productions. It's a program with news and features from across Phoenix and the state. You can find much more at theshow.kjzz.org. Here's today's episode.
Good morning. It's the show here on KJZZ 91.5 in Phoenix. I'm Mark Brody. Coming up, running a successful campaign in grade school and getting nostalgic over the weather. But first, it is time for the Friday newscap and some voices from the news this week.
If it's either, you know, knocking doors, making phone calls, chasing ballots, or having a party, the right thing to do is to choose knocking doors, making phone calls, and chasing ballots.
I have video evidence to show you of at least one instance where people show up at these folks' doors pretending to be from my client's office or similar government agencies saying, you need to prove to us you can vote. I mean, that in and of itself is a problem here.
Our client does voter outreach all the time. They've reached a million voters this year, never been a single complaint. Our client and none of our client's volunteers have ever done the kinds of things that he's talking as far as we're aware.
Our goal is obviously always transparency. So it's pulling the curtain back behind that process and showing how it all works. And again, reminding people that there are ways to follow that process as it goes.
And joining me to talk about the state GOP skipping an election night party this year, the fight over whether or not to release the names of voters affected by the MVD glitch and more are Doug Cole of High Ground. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Mark.
And Sam Richard of Consilium Consulting. Sam, good morning to you.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Good to have you guys both here. So, Doug, you're going to have to find other plans for election night this year.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to the balloon drop and all the celebration. You know, these parties have been part of the Arizona Republican Party history since I've been involved in politics in the 80s. But I got to tell you, as late, there hasn't been much to celebrate. So I can understand why they pulled the plug on the celebrations this year. In the last cycle, our former party chair, Kelly Ward, spent extravagantly on that party and was widely criticized. And to be honest with you, the party doesn't have any money. So I think it really was the logical choice, and that money should be going into races.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because that's the rationale that the new chair, Gina Swoboda, made, which is that we're going to put the money into the campaign so we actually have things to celebrate. Sounds like you don't think that's necessarily the wrong choice here.
No, it's the proper choice, especially after what happened under Kelly Ward's leadership of the party. I think it's good for them to take a break and use the little resources that they do have to try to turn some of these really tight legislative races in some of these county races that are pretty tight.
Well, so Sam, the Democrats are going to have a party on election night. Is it, I mean, I'm curious if you think, like, should the Democrats be putting more of their money into the actual races so they have maybe more to celebrate on election night?
Yeah, I think that, as you can see, if you have a television anywhere within a, 50-mile radius of your eyeballs, there hasn't been that much of a difficulty raising money for the party that is well organized and well prepared for the fight that was ahead of them. And you're seeing that happen and really express itself. So I think that the Republican Party is seeing that there might not be as much to celebrate come November 5th, and there's going to be less of a reason to have that party. All systems go on the Democratic side. And what I'm saying in terms of the heavy fundraising is that you can do both, right? We are doing the equivalent of walking and chewing gum at the same time. We're going to be able to celebrate on the evening of November 5th while knocking well over, millions of doors and making phone calls and sending text messages and making sure that we're chasing those ballots appropriately.
Do you get input on the menu at the Democrats' election night party?
No, I'm just enjoying the food and the beverage.
Okay. All right. So
the watered-down drinks.
Yeah, right? That's right. That's right.
Well, the open bar or the cash bar is always the big question,
there you go,
right?
Yeah.
So, Doug, let me ask you about this fight now over whether or not the voters who are on this list, couple hundred thousand, 200-some-odd thousand voters who have been allowed to vote full ballots despite not having shown proof of citizenship, which is what state law requires, basically due to a glitch at the Motor Vehicle Division. There's a conservative-leaning group that is trying to get the names of these voters, and Secretary of State Adrian Fontes is like, sure, you can have them, just not before the election. There's going to be a hearing coming up pretty soon where a judge is essentially saying to Fontes, prove to me why you shouldn't release them now. Do you, he is concerned that there's going to be voter intimidation, that this group is going to use this list to go after, maybe harass these voters, and make them prove maybe that they are allowed to vote. Do you buy his argument?
Well, first of all, let's back up. This isn't something that just happened in the last couple of months.
Yeah.
These voters, this has been going on as far as I can tell since the 90s, when the motor voter laws came into effect. And so this is not a new situation. What's new is it's come to light because somebody noticed a coding error in the database. There are, usually what happens in these type of cases, no major changes are made to voting procedures and anything to do with the votes. It's the cool off period because you don't want this type of thing to be weaponized.
Especially as you get closer to the election.
Exactly, exactly. In fact, there's a case going on right now in Virginia with Governor Youngkin that has some similar points that's going on here in Arizona, just not as big as a number. And so there really should be this pause around an election so it cannot be weaponized. And I think that's what the Secretary of State is trying to accomplish here because – it's going to be weaponized afterwards once it's released anyway, but at least we should try to get through the election without that controversy hanging over everybody's head.
Sam, yeah. What do you think? I mean, do you think this group – I mean, these are, in theory, at least public records. I mean, should the group not have access to them?
I think that this group and others that are allied to it have shown a propensity to weaponize that information, to Doug's point. And I think that Secretary Fontes will have a very – successful effort in defending the decision to not make that public until post-election.
Do either of you see this potentially – I mean, do you think that this could be weaponized in a sense, Doug? Like, do you think that, there's a danger that these voters could face some kind of harassment or some kind of issue that they otherwise wouldn't, especially because this is not something that they did. This is something that has nothing to do with the people involved. They did what they were – supposed to be doing, and it was a glitch somewhere else that caused this issue.
Well, I can see, I agree with Sam that eventually this information is a public record, as the public registration rules are, will be released. And I think what's going to happen afterwards is because the elections are going to be close, and especially if the presidential race is really close, like it was last time, 10,000 and some change votes, I think there'll probably be some door knocking going on, going after these people in a very long legal drawn out battle that will last into the next presidential race.
Yeah,
correct. So this is a lose-lose all the way around. It's an unfortunate situation. It's been going on for years, and we'll just have to play through it. But I think the right thing right now is to take a pause, let the election happen. And then go from there.
One of the things that's particularly interesting about this, Sam, is that even as the state Republican Party has acknowledged, a good number of these voters are registered Republicans.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's the piece here that really, if this becomes public record, there's really no guarantee that the only folks that this group that was pushing this narrative is going to go after are all of those voters. So you can specifically target that. So I think that's where the likelihood of that weaponization and harassment even goes higher. That who are they going to knock on the doors of? Everyone on that list or a particular subset of that list?
And that's why the Republicans initially, when the number was smaller, joined in with the Secretary of State. They were on the same side for once. but historically, it's got to be more Republican because Republicans have had a huge majority, not so much now. This started back in the 90s. So historically, it has to be more Republican on that list.
Yeah, by math.
By math.
Right. So guys, we saw this week and my colleague Wayne Schutzke was reporting this earlier this week about the fundraising records broken in the Maricopa County Recorder race. The Democrat Tim Stringham has raised about $612,000. The Republican nominee Justin Heap has about $353,000. This used to be a race that like nobody cared about at all, and now it's raising close to $1 million.
Yeah, well, I mean, Recorder Purcell had the office for quite
life.
A long time, right?
Yeah, so there
wasn't really any attention
right.
on the office,
yeah.
And once there was attention, I think you're really seeing that. And Arizona just generally has matured as a politically astute place. So I think that you're seeing something like numbers across all races are much higher than they ever have been. But I think that this is an outsized increase. And I think it's because of how important this position is, especially with the balance of the board in question as well.
That's right. And to Sam's point, you know, the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors for decades has been 4-1 Republican. And it could be 3-2 Republican or 3-2 Democrat, depending upon how districts 1 and 3 go in that race, because they're open seats. So, yeah, a lot of attention because, you know, the board shares election responsibilities mm-hmm. with the recorder. And the board counts all the ballots and does election day work. And the recorder typically does early balloting, voter registration duties as part of the election process. So, I'm not surprised. Stringham's out there working really hard. He's new to the scene. He's a Navy vet. Mm-hmm. Justin Heap's currently in the legislature, part of the Freedom Caucus group. So you have a real ideological difference between those two, and those are big fundraising numbers. You would never see that in the Helen Purcell days.
Right.
No, not at all.
Well, is it surprising, especially for someone like Stringham, who, Doug, as you say, is brand new to politics, that he's raised $600,000, twice what a sitting lawmaker has raised?
Right, because there's a national focus on Maricopa County, as there will continue to be as we continue to be a swing state. And there's national attention on this race.
I'm curious, real quick before we go to break, how do you both see this race shaping up? Sam, what do you think?
I think that because of the attitude and the direction globally right now, I think that every Democrat up and down the county ballot has the edge.
Sam, Doug,
I think that I agree with Sam. I don't think every Democrat has the edge, but I think that this is probably on the county race is probably the best Democrat looking year that they have had since the 70s, the 60s and the 70s. I don't think it'll be a clean sweep, but I think there's going to be some surprises.
Interesting.
In county land.
All right. That is Doug Cole. I'm also joined by Sam Richard. I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix. The Friday Newscap continues in just a moment. Good morning. It's the Friday Newscap on KJZZ 91.5. I'm Mark Brody. My guest this week, Sam Richard of Consilium Consulting and Doug Cole of High Ground. Guys, let's talk about some records that were unsealed this week. This was a big legal fight between Ruben Gallego and his ex-wife, Kate Gallego, and a conservative-leaning newspaper based out of Washington, D.C. Sam, this group had wanted the Gallegos' divorce records for some time. The Gallegos appealed to the state Supreme Court, who said they had to be unsealed. They were, and?
Nothing. It's a garden variety, to quote the judge
that was presiding
over that, right? And I think that it just truly proves that this was really a last gasp of relevancy from, you know, Lake and her allies. And it's really clear to me anyway, because I would much rather, as an ASU Sun Devil fan, much rather talk about the positives of U of A football than this particular piece of news from this week. But
wow. It
just really cements in my mind that Carrie Lake is just a piece of rotting fruit in that basket of deplorables.
Well, it brought to mind of Geraldo Rivera standing in the basement of the Lexington Hotel in the mid-80s looking for Al Capone's vault, and then there was nothing there.
Oh, wow.
So I think, you know, she was hoping for an October surprise, and it's been the October non-surprise.
That's right.
It was a complete nothing burger. And for her and her surrogates to put so much behind this, even she was on another radio station here in the Valley the day before this thing was unsealed. But she had nothing to do with it, but she kept referring to it. So you know, I'm glad this is behind us. I'm sorry that Mayor Gallego and Ruben Gallego. A lot of people forget the mayor is also on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everyone talks about Ruben Gallegos, but she also has a race going on.
Which is interesting, right? The fifth biggest city in the country,
exactly.
Mayoral race, and
no
almost
one's
nobody
talking
knows about it.
Yeah. And she has an opponent who's campaigning against her.
Yeah.
So we all focus on Ruben, but she also has a race going on the November ballot.
Absolutely.
Do you get the sense, Doug, that the Lake campaign has said that they had nothing to do with it? They sent out a statement calling this, you know, all sorts of words yesterday about how terrible this is for the Gallegos and how shameful it all is. Do you think that they were just hoping that there might be something in there? Like, I would imagine that they didn't know that this was, as Sam quoted the judge, a garden variety divorce case.
Well, I think that, you know, everybody wants to protect their kids. And, you know, they co-parent their kid. And I've seen them both with their child and them together. And I think, you know, that should be every parent's number one concern. And Carrie Lake's been going around calling herself Mama Bear. Well, I don't think a Mama Bear would behave the way she has in this instance. So I'm glad it's out there. I'm sorry it came to what it took it had to go through all these processes. But no, I think she was really looking for something because, you know, a new CBS poll just came out about an hour ago that shows her down still around 8 to 9 points. So she is in the final stage of a faltering campaign.
Yeah, and this has nothing to do with hiding from public scrutiny. Mayor Gallego has been mayor. She was on council previous to that. Congressman Gallego has taken hundreds of votes in Congress, hundreds of votes previous to that when he was in the state legislature. I think voters in both races, the city of Phoenix mayoral race and the U.S. Senate race, are very clear about the public records of both of those particular candidates. This added no material information to voters' decisions.
Do you think that the unsealing of these records and what they ultimately show, does this affect the race in any way for either candidate?
Not in the slightest bit.
No, I totally agree. Not in the slightest bit. It's a big October nothing burger.
All right. So we've quoted a judge and John Boehner in the same segment.
Yes, we have.
Like that. Yeah. All right. So there, speaking of polls, Doug, you referenced the CBS poll. There was a Noble Predictive Insights poll this week that I think caught some people off guard that showed that Congressman Eli Crane and his Democratic challenger, Jonathan Nez, former Navajo Nation president, are tied in Congressional District 2 up in northern Arizona. Am I wrong to say that this caught people by surprise?
I don't think you're wrong to catch that it caught people by surprise. I think that one of the things that Mike and the team at Noble Insights have done is really kind of established themselves as a pollster of record in Arizona and a lot of other Southwest markets. So I think that even added to kind of the oomph of this kind of result. I think that it wasn't a race that a lot of people have been paying attention to because we have Congressional District 1 and we have Congressional District 6 with Juan Ciscomani and Kirsten Engel in southern Arizona. So no one really kind of had this on their radar. Mm-hmm. But this has an opportunity, frankly, to have one of the first, if not the only, Doug will have to check my history here, but this could be the first Navajo Nation member in Congress, and that is historic, and I think there's a lot of energy in that district, and President Nez is a fantastic candidate, and I think that he's taking the Crane campaign by surprise.
Yeah, it would be the first Native American in Congress representing Arizona. You know, John, the Navajo Nation is huge. We have 22 nations in Arizona, and I think that district has probably half of them touch that district. You have the Navajos, the Hopis, all the Apache tribes are in that district, and the Zunis, and it's just amazing to see that this is even close in this district. Remember, Congressman Crane was one of the few handful of members that helped oust
Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah. He's very, very closely aligned with the Freedom Caucus, the far right caucus in Congress, and I got to tell you, I get a text from Jonathan Nez's campaign almost every day, if not twice a day. I mean, they're organized, they're raising money. He was a well-respected president of the nation. He didn't have much controversy. You know, we're going through a lot of controversy right now in the nation between the president and the vice president. But he was a pretty stable leader and was well-respected.
Mm-hmm. And he will be well-respected in Congress as well.
I mean, so, Doug, do you think that he actually could pull this off, especially because this was not a race that was on a lot of national radars? It doesn't seem like there's been a lot of, for example, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee hasn't really spent, I don't think, any money in there. And if they have, it's not a lot.
Well, the other thing that's interesting, Mark, is he's in the last reporting period, former President Nez outraised Eli Crane by $1 million.
Huh.
And that's a lot in that race. Now, it's all about turnout, okay? It's all about turnout. Turning out on tribal land and Native American lands is a whole different game. But with a good ground game, it can happen, and it could make a difference. Because remember, you also have a pretty good Trump support base up on the rim there. I mean, the Trump stores in Sholo, this is that district, okay? So you do have a very, very, very MAGA-oriented voting base up there also. So it's all going to be about turnout.
Well, so and Sam, and to Doug's point, turning out, you know, we've seen, for example, there's a story about, you know, trying to take voters on, I think, on the Navajo Nation by horseback to the polls. And it's a very different kind of situation than, you know, just getting in a car and driving to a polling place like you would here in the Valley. How does this give his campaign a boost, Nez's campaign, to have a poll come out like this that shows him tied in a race that really hasn't been on a lot of people's radars?
I think without question. I mean, I think when you have someone with a lived experience that matches those that you're asking for support at the ballot box, I think that really helps folks get up on that horse and make it to the ballot box in that way. And I think perhaps to go back to one of the first stories that we were talking about, this may be another data point of why the Republican Party isn't very interested in having a party on November 5th, because for the first time in a very, very long time, our federal delegation has a chance to be a supermajority for the Democratic Party.
Mm. All right, so guys, just a couple of minutes left. I want to ask you both really quickly about this. Normally, we wouldn't be talking about orders from the state Supreme Court that don't revolve around cases, but they're trying to prioritize election-related cases this year because, obviously, there are deadlines that that have to be met for this. So the question I want to ask each of you is, how many cases, like, are we going to see as many election-related cases this after this election as we have in the past? Sam, what do you think?
I think the easy answer is yes. A lot of that heavy fundraising that we were talking about going to is going straight to law firms that are preparing for all of these things. I think another reason why that order came out before I throw it to Doug here is that, you know, we have a vacancy that's coming up, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that there's going to be on the court. So you have someone that's going to have to be pulled up from the Court of Appeals for each of these things. So to be able to kind of prioritize that gets the whole kind of infrastructure of the judicial system ready for what's about to happen.
Well, my hat's off to Chief Justice Timmer for taking this proactive move to foreshadow what is going to happen. And to your directly to your answer your question, I think it's going to be more because of the aforementioned MVD situation we talked about earlier in the show. You're going to have, I think, a lot more races that are close, all across, you know, from local elections all the way up to U.S. Senate and probably the presidential race. So I think everything's going to be litigated. I also think the Trump campaign and the RNC has already removed their longtime lawyer here and has flown somebody in from out of state to take over the legal team here in Arizona. And I know the Democratic Party is also getting the best lawyers, and they have a lot of good election lawyers, just like the Republicans have a lot of good election lawyers. So, you know, it's going to be buckle up, and it's just not going to be in the Maricopa County Superior Court. It's going to be in a lot of these other rural courts, like we saw in Cochise County, with all the controversy down there with the supervisors.
Interesting, Mario. We'll have to leave it there. Doug Cole, Sam Richard, thanks both for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Good morning. It's the show here on KJZZ 91.5. I'm Mark Brody.
And I'm Sam Dingman. Here on the show, we have been talking a lot about the upcoming elections, and you've heard us talk about the various ways that candidates tie themselves in knots, trying to connect with voters, trying to drive a consistent message, trying to come across as human and relatable. And so today, we wanted to bring you a conversation with someone who's run for office at the local level and won both of his races. His name is Cormac Dobson. He was recently elected treasurer of his elementary school. I spoke with him recently about how to run a successful campaign, starting with his first race for third grade class representative.
My slogan was Cormac Cares for This Class.
Ooh, that's good. How'd you come up with that?
Because I care about my class.
Uh-huh, yeah. But you must have known also that it's really good to have those three C sounds in a row, right?
Yeah.
Because everybody's going to remember that slogan.
Yeah.
This is going to be kind of a weird question. Did you think to yourself, I want to run for student council? Or did you think to yourself, I want to win? Like, I want to be on student council?
I thought to myself, I want to run for student council.
Uh-huh. Okay. So then when you won, did you feel different? Like, now I got to really do this this job?
No, I felt proud of myself and I wasn't scared or anything.
So what was it like being on student council? What did you have to do?
Well, at the end of the year, We had to go to first grade or kindergarten or whatever it was, and be with the first graders or kindergartners and like read books to them. And then after, the person who was running student council would come over and ask us if we remembered their names, and I remembered most of them.
That's a very good skill in politics.
And we also had to organize fundraisers for the school.
What were you raising money for?
Well, we had a Christmas party, and I missed out on the zoo trip because I was at the party. I didn't even want to really go to the zoo, though.
You would rather be at the party?
Yeah. I had got, like, so much candy and stuff.
I mean, that sounds better than a zoo trip to me. When you were reading to the younger kids, did you like doing that?
Yes. I liked it when I got to meet one of the kindergartners who was the little brother of one of my friends, and somehow he knows my name already.
Yeah, maybe that's because your friend has told him about you.
Yeah.
So you got into fourth grade. How did you find out that you could run for treasurer?
In the beginning of the year, they gave us a paper, and they made us circle an option that we wanted to run for, and mm-hmm. I circled treasurer.
What made you circle treasurer?
When my mom told me that it involved math, and then I just circled it right away because I love math.
Okay.
I have to count up all the money and stuff, so.
And that was exciting to you?
Yeah. It was exciting because I don't really have much responsibilities since I'm 8 years old.
Yeah, for sure.
But I want to have some responsibilities so I know how it feels like.
So did you have to make a speech again and make a poster and everything?
Yes. Okay. But this time I had to make 3 posters.
Oh, okay. What did you do for your poster this time? What was your slogan?
I put Cormac Cares for this class again, and then I put It Pays to Vote for Cormac. And this was Mom's idea for my slogan, You Can Count on Cormac.
Ooh, that's good. Would you read your speech for us?
Sure. My name is Cormac Dobson, and I'm in fourth grade. I am running for treasurer. I am the best candidate for treasurer because I'm good at math and I'm organized. Last year, I was the third grade class representative. On student council, I helped organize fundraisers for the school. I have perfect grades and experience in leadership. Thank you for listening. Please vote for me.
Nice. And that was a winning message.
Yeah.
After you won, then you went and met probably the president and the vice president, the other people who had won their elections for the first time, right?
Yeah.
What was that like? Did you know those people already?
Yeah, some of them were already in student council last year.
Okay. Did it feel different talking to them as treasurer than it does to talk to them just as Cormac?
Not really.
Because, you know, they say sometimes politics changes people.
Yeah. Not me.
And you're the treasurer for the whole school?
Well, I organized the money for the whole school. So we're going to have a book fair soon. So me and my student council friends, we're going to circle some books that should be at the book fair. And then we need to make sure that it adds up to 500. So one of my friends, the president or vice president, writes down all the prices of the books, and then I add them all together.
Gotcha. In Congress, they call that the power of the purse. So you're the one who decides if the president can have what the president wants.
Yeah.
Do you think you'll keep running for office as you keep getting into higher grades at school?
Yes. I want to eventually be president.
What's exciting to you about being the president?
Because it's a big responsibility, and like I said already, I want to have, like, a responsibility.
You seem like a pretty serious guy. You think of yourself as a serious guy?
No.
No? Okay. You don't. How do you think of yourself?
I think of myself as the person who's just funny all the time.
Yeah. You make your friends laugh?
Yes. I make people laugh by, like, talking in different voices and being funny and stuff like that.
Can you give us an example of one of your voices?
Like this.
That's a good voice. That's a good voice. Do you think that's a side of yourself that would ever come out in your work as treasurer if you got to be the president?
Well, if I was president, I wouldn't be that funny because I want to be, like, serious and be a role model.
So, you have now won two elections, and you got your sights set on winning some more. What advice would you have for anybody who's listening to this and wants to run for office themselves?
Don't be a sore loser or a sore winner, and be kind to those who are running against you and those in your community.
Well, Cormac Dobson is treasurer at an elementary school here in the Valley. Treasurer Dobson, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Good morning. It's the show here on KJZZ 91.5. I'm Mark Brody.
And I'm Lauren Gilger. As the climate is changing and the weather is getting scarier, a new internet trend is giving people an escape in the form of nostalgia. It's called weather wave. And it's actually a subgenre of another popular YouTube phenomenon known as vaporwave. It looks like this. Throwback, often kind of poppy jazz tunes are playing over videos of people's old camcorder home videos. Or, when it comes to weather wave, videos of the vintage Weather Channel. I spoke more about it with culture writer Ade Adeniji.
It's a mix of, like, visuals and audio, but really the key is that it's kind of, you know, it's electric music genre that really kind of really merged in the early 2010s. But then it's also set to these, you know, nostalgic videos and imagery. It could be anything from, like, an old Transformers cartoon clip to kind of, like, you know, someone's family vacation on VHS down to, like, Disneyland. But really, the key is that it's about the past. It's set to music. And then the different visuals will change depending on the subgenre.
Right, right. Well, I want to talk about one of those at least now, because there's a subgenre here at least that I'm interested in about weather wave, right? That brings in specifically the Weather Channel of all things in these videos. Tell us what this is like. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as it turns out, it wasn't just me who was a big fan of the Weather Channel growing up. You know,
right.
It's a huge thing that everyone, you know, from the 80s when it first launched into the 90s, any 90s kid or 80s kid, either in the background or directly, they could have been traveling in a, you know, lonely motel, but everyone was watching or came into contact with the Weather Channel. You know, it was 24 hours, 365, 7 days a week. So it's just this constant loop.
And now stay tuned for the Days In 5-Day Business Planner, America's waking up to Days Ins. Late this afternoon, we'll find a frontal system plowing through the Northeast. It is extremely
and kind of this subgenre of vaporwave called weather wave, you know, plays on that ubiquity.
Yeah. Okay. So you've written about this. You've read the comments. Like, you've talked to some experts about what this might mean. I guess. Tell us a little bit about why you think this is hitting a nerve right now in our culture.
I mean, there's a couple of different angles. The first one is, you know, kind of like I alluded to, the Weather Channel was just this huge, you know, touchstone, and, you know, really still is. But for anyone who's, you know, millennial, even, you know, a little bit after, we all had this constant loop of this channel that you had the national forecast, but then you also had the local on the 8th. So whether you're in New York City or, you know, Asheville, you know, it was just there for everyone. Then another angle I was playing with was kind of just a way to kind of hide from the harsher realities of climate these days. You know, of course, we're just coming on the heels of, you know, the awful, you know, devastation from Hurricane Helene, and, you know, actually was live blogging about that as it was coming ashore. But just these unprecedented storms, you know, from a Category 1 to Category 4 in 12 hours.
Yeah.
Like over this ultra hot water in the Gulf of Mexico, and really wreaked its devastation, not on the coast, but I mean, you know, did, but then unusually inland. You know, these were like high mountain communities in North Carolina that have never seen something like this. And, you know, unfortunately, it's going to take years for everyone to, you know, come up out of it.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your interest in this in particular, right? Like, you're a self-proclaimed like weather nerd, right? You love weather.
Yeah, you know, so I don't know if you have a Nigerian dad, but I do. And there was no fun to be had during the school year. And so it was kind of just, it was either I watched the news, which of course as a seven-year-old bored me. So I discovered the Weather Channel, and this was kind of my retreat. Got obsessed with clouds. Then later on did this, I randomly did this internship during high school with this meteorologist who's like the first person to bring a cloud stamp for the U.S. Postal Service. So I have all these like random connections to weather, kind of took a break from it for a while. And, you know, starting like last year, I started, you know, ramping up my weather writing again, and I've been doing it for AccuWeather and some other sites, and been having a blast, and that's really why it's been on my mind.
Yeah, yeah. So this is definitely on your mind, and apparently, you know, hits a nerve with a lot of other people too. So when you're looking at Weather Channel videos in particular, and the music that goes over it is specific, I guess I should say. I mean, like, what's the effect, do you think? Like, I watched some of this, and I think you hit on the word in your article for Wired. Like, it's unsettling, especially because of the kind of climate reality we're living in now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's always this, like, this weird dissonance. It's like, you know, there's popular weather figures from back in the day. Jim Cantore is still around. He's huge now.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to start just, you know, chasing storms. Or this other guy, Steve Lyons, but you have, like, on the one hand, all this soothing music, you know, it's as if you're at the beach, but, you know, on the other hand, he's there, like, you know, waving his hands madly, you know, because there's a severe thunderstorm warning. So there's, it's a weird contrast. You know, on the one hand, you could argue that maybe it's kind of, you know, lulling you to sleep, if you will. There's, like, this crazy storm outside, but you just want to go to sleep. So that's, this is what this sound provides. Or it could be, in a way, kind of, you know, playing dumb, you know, at this point. What's going on with climate and with weather is, you know, quite concerning. And I think even some people in the past who, you know, were somewhat skeptical, like, it's just too much evidence. The evidence is there, but vaporwave almost doubles down on the idea that, oh, everything's okay. Because how else can you go through every day thinking about the catastrophe that we're dealing with?
Yeah. So is this like digital escapism, basically, like people diving into nostalgia in this way?
Yeah, and I don't even think it necessarily has to be bad. I think some people had, you know, some reactions that were a little bit more strong to my article. For me, I think nostalgia and kind of playing dumb on some level is required because, again, some of this stuff is just, you know, quite overwhelming that, you know, sometimes you just want to get away from it all.
Yeah, no, I can feel that. That's fair. You also dive into a little bit of the history of the Weather Channel itself and the guy who made its original music, which I can hear in my head as I'm asking this question. Tell us about that.
I found it very important to find him because, first of all, I love that music. You know, everyone knows.
Yeah.
Apparently, he like wrote 48 tracks that just were on loop for all the local on the eights around the country. So everyone on some level has this hum going on in their head, for sure. But some people, some of these vaporwave artists have kind of taken his sounds, taken credit for videos and for music that is not theirs. Mm. And so, of course, you know, that's not good. And so I felt like it was important to kind of connect with him and make sure his story was told. And, you know, now you're at this weird breaking point where on the one hand, you have Tramiel Starks. This is the name of the composer. Mm-hmm. But then you also have these vaporwave artists, and together they hold the memories of, you know, this nostalgic period of the Weather Channel.
Yeah. So it does feel like specifically of this moment that Weather Wave is hitting a nerve. Do you have any thoughts, predictions, things that you're already seeing on the horizon that you think might be kind of the next trend along these lines?
There's another one of these subgenres called meme wave. And, you know, memes are still, I mean, I feel like I'm old now, but to me, memes feel... Memes feel still pretty new.
Yeah.
But I can imagine a time where even these, you know, things that are relatively new will be old. And instead of, you know, video and vaporwave setting and sound of that, it's going to be these, you know, crazy memes that have been popular in, you know, the last few years that will now have a vaporwave component to them.
Wow. There it goes. Time keeps rolling. Okay, we'll leave it there. That is Ade Adeniji, a philanthropy journalist and culture writer, joining us to talk about his recent piece in Wired about vaporwave and weatherwave. Ade, thank you so much for coming on. This is fascinating stuff.
Thanks for your time. Have fun.
That's it for this episode of the show's podcast. To find out more about the stories from today or other episodes, you can visit theshow.kjzz.org. And you can subscribe to KJZZ's The Show on your favorite podcasting site. I'm Lauren Gilger for Mark Brody. Thanks for listening today.